I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Masha is the first person I've met in the entire world with dance moves equally as unorthodox as my own. She's unlike anyone I've ever known.
After 3 weeks in Canada, I am in love. I have no doubt. But I don't know how Matthew sees our relationship in the future, and whether he sees that future at all. Although I could swear he felt something serious too.
I'm falling for somebody a world away. I laugh off friends and family, questioning what I'm doing, pursuing a relationship with someone in Ukraine.
My experience of love in a distance showed that it doesn't last. I'm not ready for another romantic epistolary episode that will last forever. I've had enough dead-end adventures.
Love conquers all.
This is Play Me, your digital theater. We transform the hottest contemporary plays into bingeable audio dramas. I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley.
Welcome to Play Me. You're listening to the show that transforms theater scripts by award-winning writers into bingeable audio fiction. You just heard a clip from today's feature, the award-winning and real-life story, First Matey Man of Odessa, by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homatova. Hi, I'm Chris Tolley, here with my co-host, Laura Mullen.
Hey, Chris. So we have never presented a production like this before on our show. This play is so riveting and poignant because it captures the true story of how Matt, a Canadian Métis playwright, met Maria, a Ukrainian actor, during a theater workshop in Kyiv and began an unexpected relationship right before the global pandemic and Russian invasion of Ukraine. It's an epic saga of love amidst adversity, made even more compelling because it's written and performed by the very couple who lived through it, offering a raw, intimate portrayal of their recent journey together, and it's a show that we know our listeners are going to just love.
Now, few plays resonate with the present moment as deeply as this one. With the conflict in Ukraine now stretching into its third year without a clear resolution in sight, this show underscores the enduring tensions in the region. Matt and Maria's story offers a unique window into the human side of this conflict, providing a perspective you just can't get through news coverage. Their production is refreshingly authentic and infused with humor and candidness, and we're just so happy to be able to present it to you here on Play Me.
This is part one of two of First Matey Man of Odessa, written and performed by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homatova.
Hi, my name is Matthew McKenzie, and I'm artistic director of Punctuate Theatre. I'm not an actor, but in this play, A True Story, I perform the role of myself, Matt McKenzie. Punctuate Theatre is proud to be based in Amiskwichi, Waskahegan, on the banks of the Kiskichewan River, the traditional stomping grounds of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, Nakota Sioux, Stoney, and Métis. Before we begin, I'd like to direct your attention to our website, punctuatetheatre.com, where you will find information about where you can make a donation to support the efforts of some of the Ukrainians you'll hear about in this show. Slava Ukraini. Thanks, everyone.
Героям слава. I don't want your donations. We have donations. Toys, clothes, food. No. What do I need? Let me tell you. I need an apartment. Can you give me an apartment? People come here with their donations and they stare at me like at the animal in the zoo. Have you come to stare at me too?
October 21st, 2018. My Canadian theater colleagues and I have been in eastern Ukraine, near the front line between Ukrainian troops and Russian-backed separatists, conducting interviews for a play with people caught up in a conflict much of the world has forgotten about. Our research culminates in a workshop with Ukrainian actors in Kyiv, where I meet Masha, an actress originally from Odessa.
This woman you spoke with, she asked you for an apartment?
No. Well, yes, she was asking, like, the West.
You were taking requests?
No, we were conducting interviews. This is something she said.
To relay to the West?
To the Canadian public at large, I guess.
I don't believe she meant that.
You can watch the tape. That's what she said.
I don't want your donations. I want an apartment in the West.
No, that's not what she said.
That's what you said, she said.
She said what's written on the page. Nothing more, nothing less.
In Canada, you have subtext.
Yes.
It sounds like she's saying, I don't want to answer your questions. Canada, fuck off.
Yes. Perhaps. Masha scared the bejesus out of my Canadian colleagues and myself. She'd studied the Stanislavski acting method with a master who'd studied with a master who'd studied with Stanislavski himself. She was...
three handshakes away from Stanislavski, as we say.
But just like a piano player being three handshakes away from Mozart.
Most men get into the theater so that they can listen to their own voice as much as possible. But not Matthew. During our whole workshop, he just sits and listens. I've always believed that smart people don't talk a lot, so Matthew was this peculiar silent fellow with kind eyes and big forehead.
Masha starts to linger on the steps of the theater after rehearsal.
Matt lingers, not the other way around.
We go out to interview Ukrainian veterans, and I invite Masha to join us.
The veterans are fiery boys. They speak about a future Russian invasion with total conviction. But as many Ukrainians, I don't want to listen.
The veterans are members of the Bob Marley Squad, a reggae-loving group of friends who formed during the Maidan Revolution in 2013.
Being at home drove me crazy during Maidan. I was so afraid to go to the square, so I just volunteered at a church near my house, making borscht for the protesters. Not very interesting.
No way! The famous Babushka Borscht Brigades.
I'm no babushka. And there's nothing exciting about making borscht, believe me.
But you did your part to support the protesters, and they were victorious.
Yes, they overthrew the government.
Which led Russia to send in little green men to occupy Crimea and arm separatists to try to seize the Donbass in the east.
Listen, I'm not the best example of political consciousness. I've just started a new relationship in 2014 when war broke out in the East. My new boyfriend and I were going to a yoga retreat.
Okay, but you were in the majority. Most Ukrainians didn't fight in 2014. And when it became clear that the Ukrainian military wasn't in a position to defend Ukrainian territory, volunteers like the Bob Marley Squad rushed to the front.
Those guys were just kids. When they rushed to the front, they didn't even have guns.
They stopped the advance.
But at what cost?
At an incredible cost. But they were fighting for their future, for liberty. They were fighting against tyranny. For you and me.
Over the course of the week, Matt's Canadian colleagues tell me about some of his peculiarities.
Yeah, there are a lot of Ukrainians in Canada. The city where I'm from is nicknamed Edmundchuk.
He has never had a normal job because he can't stand authority.
Have you heard of Gretzky?
For 15 years he ran his own house painting company.
Have you heard of BP?
It took 10 years to write his first play.
BP stands for Boston Pizza. It's a huge restaurant in Canada, originally started in Edmonton.
During that decade it took him to write his first play.
I'm not sure why they didn't call it Edmonton Pizza. Boston's just more exotic, I guess.
He rewrote the same scene 300 times.
Have you heard this song?
He gets a group of hardened veterans to perform chicken dance.
Yeah, originally recorded in Edmonton.
So, why did you come on this adventure?
To see, to learn.
Do you think that by telling the stories of those who are suffering, the West will be inspired to save Ukraine?
We don't think we'll save anyone, but we do believe more people need to pay attention to what's happening in Ukraine.
I don't believe that writing a play based on the real words of real people can be art.
Reality can be art.
But it's not real. The moment when you put a person's real words into an actor's mouth.
It's not real in a literal sense, but I think there's the potential power to communicate a deeper truth through performance.
So if I want to write a play about myself and the events that truly happened in my life, it will be art?
If you experience something remarkable enough or terrible enough, sure.
If I truly suffer enough.
More theater needs to be about the here and now. If I've got to watch another urgent adaptation of a Shakespeare or Chekhov, I'm going to gouge out my own eyes.
You cannot reduce Chekhov to some dusty old guy from history. Chekhov is a master. A meat trader. Chekhov deals with the meat of the soul.
I've never considered writers to be butchers of souls.
All the great playwrights and poets are searching for truth.
That's why I write. I'm trying to make sense of what is happening in the world, and in my head, and in my heart.
You compare yourself to the masters.
No, I'm saying that when I don't write, I lose my mind. So, writing for me, searching, as you say, is a necessary thing.
And the classics for me are a necessary thing.
We both have needs.
We'll be right back.
I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of 6 darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. You understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the night before our performance, Matthew makes an excuse to find me backstage.
I'm part of the team. I don't need an excuse to say break a leg.
Oh, in Ukraine we say, I hope you don't get a single feather, as if you were speaking to a hunter.
I hope you don't get a single feather.
Damn you! Will there be champagne after the performance?
Not to my knowledge.
Premiere without the champagne. It's like a field without a wheat in Ukraine. It's a bad luck not to drink after toasting.
I can't. I'm allergic.
To champagne?
And to wine, peanuts, horses, and all molds and grasses.
So you bought the whole bottle of champagne just for me? It's been an honor to meet you.
The honor has been mine.
We say goodbye? This will be the last time I saw this peculiar guy, I'm certain. But, to my amazement, not long after we part, Matthew begins a correspondence.
We'd established a friendship.
Over many months, Matthew messages me from all across Canada, or Turtle Island, as he calls it.
Masha messages me from all over Ukraine and the former Eastern Bloc.
Matthew travels like a circus boy.
Masha travels like a red sparrow, a Soviet spy.
Matthew loves the mountains.
Masha loves the sea.
Matthew is Métis.
Masha is a 7th generation Odessan.
Matthew is 7th generation Edmontonian.
Masha goes on solo pilgrimages to the final resting spots of her favorite poets, and then recites their poetry graveside, rain or shine.
Matthew experienced heartbreak in his 20s and didn't date again for 2,000 days.
Masha wants to get married and have a family.
Matthew never really thought about having a family.
My life is too crazy.
I'm worried that I'm falling for someone who is a world away. But after a year of this correspondence, Matthew messages me.
Hey. Howdy. Was it just me? Forgive me for asking, but was it just me? Or was there a spark between you and I when we met last year in Kyiv?
Certainly. You conquered me. I caution we must not get swept away too quickly. I want this to be real, not just a flight of fancy.
Masha flies to me.
Toronto is amazing!
I can't believe she thinks Toronto is amazing.
I try venison for the first time.
553 meters in the sky.
We go to Niagara Falls.
Embracing in the mist.
Like in that movie with Marilyn Monroe.
We go to Odessa, Ontario.
But it's nothing like the Odessa I know.
We go to La Belle Provence and climb the mountain in Montreal.
But it's not a mountain at all.
Back in Toronto, we walk around my neighborhood with my French bulldog, Nev.
Matthew speaks to Nev in a curious manner.
You tender pooch. You nipply nugget. Nevy, 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 you're such a special girl. Nevy, 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 you're the specialist girl in the world. We go to the theater, where, right before the climax of a Canadian classic, Masha memorably mutters,
"We are surrounded by farters."
We go to Real Words by Real People Theater, but Masha can't make it through.
It's not art.
We go to a vegan restaurant where three separate patrons scoff at Masha's fur jacket.
A gift from my grandmother.
We go to a jerk chicken restaurant where three separate patrons compliment Masha's fur jacket.
The best part about Toronto is that everyone is from somewhere else.
Masha is the first person I've met in the entire world with dance moves equally as unorthodox as my own. She's unlike anyone I've ever known.
After 3 weeks in Canada, I am in love. I have no doubt. But I don't know how Matthew sees our relationship in the future, and whether he sees that future at all. Although I could swear he felt something serious too.
I'm falling for somebody a world away. I laugh off friends and family, questioning what I'm doing, pursuing a relationship with someone in Ukraine.
My experience of love in a distance showed that it doesn't last. I'm not ready for another romantic epistolary episode that will last forever. I've had enough dead-end adventures.
Love conquers all. I return for a second contract to Ukraine, just in time to catch Masha perform in a night of poetry.
But boundless oceans roaring white between my love and me, they never, never can divide my heart and soul from thee.
Masha is in full diva mode, flowers raining, champagne popping. We return to Masha's flat, where the diva takes her tiara off, then produces two pairs of matching Ukrainian slippers.
Tapochki. It's important to have warm feet.
February 1st, 2020. My second contract in Ukraine involves interviewing more veterans from the ongoing conflict in the East. They repeat again and again that the Russians aren't done, and that it's only a matter of time before they launch a full-scale invasion.
But I don't want to talk about war or politics. I want to discuss culture and the matters of the heart.
We're talking about the suppression and erasure of culture.
Ukraine is full of culture.
Russian culture?
Ukrainian culture, too.
How many Ukrainians can name a Ukrainian playwright?
I'm not sure.
But they can name Russian playwrights.
Yes, of course.
We're the same. Most Canadians can't name a Canadian playwright, but since childhood have had Shakespeare drilled into them.
You are an anti-classicalist.
I didn't know that was a thing. No, I'm against my culture, or Ukrainian culture, tacitly operating like it's inferior. I mean, it's well documented how the British and the Russians have used their cultural canon as a colonial weapon. After swallowing Crimea, how is it still possible for the Kremlin to be funding Russian-language theaters in Ukraine?
How good that you have come. Now you can fix all our problems.
I'm not fixing anything. I'm just repeating what the veterans are saying.
The contract ends.
We travel to Odessa.
To meet with my mother and father.
I've never seen drivers like the ones in Odessa. It's like every unmarked taxi is a getaway car.
We meet with my parents, divorced since I was 12, separately.
First, we meet Masha's mother, Olga, a larger-than-life language expert. Over a Napoleon cake, which Olga and I discover we share a near spiritual affinity for, I learn that Olga grew up all over the communist world, in Cuba, Budapest, and Tambov, Russia, which I've never heard of before.
The ancestral home of Rachmaninoff.
Who I have heard of before.
The fact that Matthew not only knows who Rachmaninoff is, but also that he had massive hands, deeply impresses my mother.
Saying goodbye to Olga, we go to meet Masha's father, Eugene, a doctor. Masha informs me that she hasn't introduced a man to her father in 10 years.
My father doesn't speak that much English. But somehow, Matthew makes him laugh.
We sit with Eugene, drinking Svitopivo in a smuggler's tavern, serenaded by musicians singing about the exploits of famed Odessa bandits.
They also sing about romance.
About smugglers stealing lovers from other smugglers.
Yeah, they have wide repertoire.
Leaving Eugene, we walk along the shores of the Black Sea.
My parents love you, Matthew.
Your mother says I look like Paul Giamatti, and your father says I'm not an alcoholic.
These are huge compliments.
We climb the steps of Potemkin.
We go to the Odessa Opera Theater. My grandpa's soul still lives here. He used to come here every week. For 40 years, even when Odessa was under occupation in the Second World War. We buy tickets to whatever is playing that night.
Remarkably, the very same waltz I danced with Nevi to in anticipation of being reunited with Masha again plays to open the show.
After the performance, we sip cherry wine.
Then walk the grand promenade in the footsteps of Shevchenko and Mark Twain.
We dance under the light of the moon.
To an impossibly old man with an accordion.
Playing Celine Dion. О, дай мне умереть, покуда весь мир как книга для меня.
Translation.
Oh, let me die while the whole world is like an open book to me.
See you soon.
See you very, very soon.
On the flight home, I sit across the aisle from a man who just can't seem to catch his breath, coughing a dry cough as we cross the Atlantic.
Right as Matthew leaves, COVID levels in Ukraine are exploding.
2 days after we part, countries close their borders.
The international travel ban goes into effect.
Suddenly, We don't know when we'll see each other again. The time Masha and I spent together was incredibly special. Everything felt possible. But now, a world apart, with no idea when we'll see each other again. We're both artists with limited means. An international romance was already a touch improbable. Now, the improbable is beginning to feel like the impossible.
I try to act normally when Matthew shares his concerns, hiding my fear of losing this relationship that I want so much.
Then, out of the blue, I receive a link from Masha's father, Eugene, to dance me to the end of love.
Oh, Odessans adore Leonard Cohen.
He doesn't send it with any note or explanation. Something about receiving this song from Eugene makes something click. This is real.
This is real.
Not knowing when we'll see each other again, I begin writing Masha every day so that I don't lose my mind.
Red sparrow, fly to me. Perch atop your balcony, bring your wings, then leap and soar to the sea.
Follow the shore until you reach the mouth of the Danube. Then follow it up through the Carpathians, where you will meet a tomtit, who, with custom dictates, you must dance a hopak with.
Cross the Danube and hug the crescent of the Alps until you come to the Pyrenees, following the chain to the Atlantic.
Crossing the ocean, follow the route my Kukum Nistishu took as a girl when her parents paddled west until you reach Lake Winnipie, where you will encounter a chickadee who, with custom dictates, you must dance a matey jig.
Continuing, follow the Kisaskatchewan River until you reach a Miskwichiwaskahagan.
From high up, you will see a long black bridge spanning the river, with me sitting atop the train tracks, my forehead catching the light like a solar panel.
Slowly weave your way down from the sky and land in front of me. Be patient. I may not recognize you right away.
When I do realize the Red Sparrow is you, I will kiss you softly on the crown of your head, and you will transform into my Masha, and we will say,
finally, we are together again.
After a particularly poetic exchange one evening, Masha casually informs me she's...
Late. Right.
We agree that Masha will take a pregnancy test the next morning when I'm awake and have my wits about me.
But I can't wait. I'm 7 hours ahead. I can't wait all day.
I open my eyes the next morning to a series of emojis which inform me...
A little squeakling is on its way.
You want to go through with the pregnancy?
Are you joking?
No, yes, it's just something people consider, considering there's a lot to consider.
Do you love me?
Madly.
Then, it's a blessing. You are a reliable and responsible man. You will be a great father.
I am not a responsible man. People told me I shouldn't even get a dog. I'm never in the same place for more than 6 weeks. I don't know my income from 1 month to the next. I've got no savings, no property.
That may be true, but you have been living a life of a bachelor. And Navy is one of the happiest dogs I know.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to wrap my head around everything. These are life-altering emojis I just received.
Do you think it won't alter my life?
Of course it will.
My life is over. My life is over. That's what I thought after I did a test.
No, it's not.
A new life is beginning, but what life? Is my career over? My dreams? No more adventures? No more freedom? My mother says she will help me to raise this child if you'll never return to Ukraine.
I will not abandon you and the baby.
Your baby.
My baby.
Our baby.
okay.
Will we have our baby in Odessa or in Canada?
Well, if we have our baby in Ukraine, embassies have stopped processing passport applications, so we don't know when we'll be able to legally fly with our baby. And even if I can figure out how to get into Ukraine, work won't allow me to stay indefinitely.
Which means we'll be separated again.
That's not happening.
So, we must have our baby in Canada.
But your visitor's visa isn't enough to get you in anymore. Only individuals married to a Canadian national can enter now.
So?
So, I'll figure out how to fly across the world in the middle of a pandemic and sneak into Ukraine.
I'll buy a dress.
I'll buy a tux.
I'll book a bent.
I'll pick the flowers.
We will wed. And then we'll go to Canada.
Where we will welcome our squeakling.
That was part one of two of First Matey Man of Odessa, written and performed by Maria Homotova and Matthew McKenzie. Chris, I can't help but just get so drawn into Matt and Maria's story because it's so sweet and romantic. But when we're listening to it, we know what's coming for them, even though they don't at this moment in the play, a pandemic and Russian invasion. And they are both so charming and we become very invested in them as a couple. And now with the baby on the way, the stakes in this relationship are incredibly high.
I totally agree. And what also attracts me to this show is that, yes, the backdrop is war and what motivates them is love. But it also demonstrates what happens when you take different cultures and perspectives and just mash them together. You know, Ukrainian toughness and North American tenacity, indigenous sensibility and European attitudes, a love of documentary theater and a hatred of documentary theater. And what happens when you take two people from two very different backgrounds and just throw them into the blender of parenthood and just whirl it all together? This show is what comes out of that.
We'll return next week with a dramatic conclusion to First Matey Man of Odessa, a real-life love story. In the meantime, if you want to hear more plays by Indigenous playwrights, we recommend Where the Blood Mixes by Kevin Loring and Huff by Cliff Cardinal. All excellent plays available on Play Me wherever you get your podcasts.
First Matey Man of Odessa was written and performed by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova. The original theatrical production was directed by Liana McCourt.
First Matey Man of Odessa premiered as a national tour at the Theatre Centre in Toronto and has gone on to the Citadel Theatre, Western Canada Theatre and the Culch, with upcoming dates at Soul Pepper and the National Arts Centre. This episode's sound design, edit, and mix are by Gregory J. Sinclair. Thanks for listening.
We'd love to know what you think about Play Me. You can connect with us by emailing playme@cbc.ca. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Play Me wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing, you can listen to all our past shows and you won't miss a single one of our new episodes. And while you're there, we would love it if you would consider rating and reviewing us. It helps spread the word about our podcast, bringing theater to a whole new audience. Play Me is produced by Laura Mullen and Chris Tolley in partnership with CBC Podcasts. Our associate producer is Brianne Tice. A special thanks to our CBC team. Anna Achete is our digital producer, and our executive producer is Cecil Fernandez.
The director of CBC Podcasts is Arif Narani, and the executive director is Leslie Merklinger.
Play Me is funded by the Canada Council for the Arts and the Ontario Arts Council. Play Me is an Expect Theatre production. For more information about our plays, please visit playmepodcast.com.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.